Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
A renegade Libyan general suspends the country's parliament and vote counting continues in Guinea-Bissau. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. Forces loyal to a former top Libyan general say they have suspended the country's interim parliament after several days of fighting against Islamist militiamen in the capital of Tripoli and the eastern port city of Benghazi. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Sporadic shootouts between Libyan army units loyal to former army chief of staff Khalifa Haftar and Islamist militiamen gave way to a precarious calm Monday. Each side claimed to have the support of the Libyan people and demanded the other back down. The head of Libya's military police, Colonel Mukhtar Farnana, who supports Haftar, called for a new interim governing structure for the country in a statement read on Libyan state TV. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Vote counting is underway in Guinea-Bissau after Sunday's second round presidential election. The poll is aimed at restoring constitutional order after a 2012 military coup, one of several to hit the country in its 40-year history. Witnesses say Sunday's polling was peaceful. The country's election commission put voter turnout at between 60% and 65%. That's lower than the 80% recorded in the first round in April 13th. It was not clear today when the commission will begin releasing results. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered troops staging military drills in areas near Ukraine to return to their home bases. The Kremlin made the announcement today, just days before a crucial presidential election in Ukraine. However, NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen said today that the alliance has yet to see evidence of a withdrawal, noting that this is not the first time Mr. Putin had announced a troop pullback. He warned that any effort to delay or disrupt Sunday's presidential vote would set back efforts to end Ukraine's political crisis. Bosnia's foreign minister says more than a quarter of Bosnia-Herzegovina's 4 million people have been affected by the worst flooding to hit the region in more than a century. The foreign minister said today that some 1 million people have been cut off from clean water supplies and more than 100,000 homes and 230 schools and health institutions have been destroyed in the flooding. At least 37 people have died in the floods in Bosnia, Croatia, and Serbia. Tens of thousands of people have been left homeless. Much of the region remains underwater today as rescue and evacuation efforts continue. The United States is charging five members of China's military with cyber crimes for allegedly hacking into U.S. company computers to steal trade secrets. VOA's Jim Randall reports.
U.S. officials have long complained Chinese hackers have been breaking into computers run by U.S. companies to steal the methods and plans developed at great expense by American research. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder says negotiation and diplomacy have not stopped these alleged attacks, so Washington is taking legal action.
These represent the first ever charges against known state actors for infiltrating United States commercial targets by cyber means.
Stolen trade secrets could be a shortcut to developing products that unfairly compete with U.S. products. That's because it is far cheaper to steal plans than to do the research and take the time needed to develop an original product. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
Emergency officials in Colombia say at least 31 children were burned to death when their bus caught fire near the city of Fundación. Officials said the bus burst into flames Sunday while transporting children home from a church service. At least 20 other people were seriously burned and taken to hospitals. Colombian President Juan Manuel Santos, speaking at a campaign rally in Bogotá, said he would immediately travel to Fundación to console families of the victims. The accident is being investigated. Unconfirmed reports say the bus driver was handling a fuel container inside the cabin in an attempt to get the bus restarted when the fire broke out and spread quickly. A Pakistani court has dismissed the case against an FBI agent accused of trying to carry ammunition onto a flight. The American, identified as Joel Cox, was arrested May 5th after airport authorities in Karachi found during routine checks that he was carrying 15 bullets for a 9mm handgun and three knives. I'm Frances Alonso, VOA News.
morning and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Forces loyal to a former top Libyan general say they have suspended the country's interim parliament after several days of fighting against Islamist militiamen in the capital, Tripoli, and the eastern port city of Benghazi.
That's Edward Yeranian reporting from Cairo. Details next.
Also in the news, the United Nations warns that Somalia is at risk of another famine, and tensions are mounting in the northern Malian town of Kidal.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Uganda, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, forces loyal to a former top Libyan general say they have suspended the country's interim parliament after several days of fighting against Islamist militiamen in the capital, Tripoli, and the eastern port city of Benghazi. Members of Libya's interim government have condemned the general, while his supporters say that both the parliament and the government are no longer legitimate. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Sporadic shootouts between Libyan army units loyal to former army chief of staff Khalifa Haftar and Islamist militiamen gave way to a precarious calm Monday. Each side claimed to have the support of the Libyan people and demanded the other back down. The head of Libya's military police, Colonel Mukhtar Farnana, who supports Haftar, called for a new interim governing structure for the country in a statement read on Libyan state TV. He says that activities of the General National Assembly should be frozen and that a new interim government should be formed. He calls for the appointment of a committee of 60 wise men to oversee the government and organize new elections. The legal mandate for Libya's parliament ran out several months ago, and caretaker Prime Minister Abdullah Thani's government resigned several weeks ago. Thani's successor, businessman Ahmed Maitik, who is supported by Islamist parties, including the Muslim Brotherhood, has been unable to form a government, and opponents dispute his legitimacy. Speaking on Libyan state TV, caretaker Justice Minister Salah al-Mirghani deplored the violence and insisted that all parties to the conflict stop resorting to violence. He says the government condemns all parties who express their political views by using armed force and calls for an immediate halt in the use of arms from Libya's military arsenal. He also deplores the loss of two lives in fighting Sunday. The Islamic militant group Ansar al-Sharia, which opposes General Haftar, insisted in a video on its website that the general had entered into a battle which he cannot win. Ansar al-Sharia, which is strongest in eastern Libya, has sworn loyalty to al-Qaeda leader Ayman Zawahiri. A spokesman for Haftar, Colonel Mohammed Hijazi, denounced both Ansar al-Sharia and the Tripoli-based Revolutionary Command Center militia, insisting that both Islamist groups would ultimately bring ruin upon the country since neither sees eye to eye with the other. Worried by the threat of more fighting, both the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia closed their embassies in Tripoli. Turkey closed its consulate in Benghazi and evacuated its employees to a local airport. Algeria withdrew its ambassador last week. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The United Nations warns that Somalia is at risk of another famine due to drought, rising food prices, and the lingering threat posed by Al-Shabaab militants. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports the UN says a funding shortfall is forcing agencies to scale down humanitarian work when it's needed most.
At a news conference in Nairobi Monday, UN Humanitarian Coordinator for Somalia, Philippe Lazzarini, said the current situation in Somalia has troubling similarities with the conditions seen in the country before the famine declared in 2011.
There is an ongoing conflict. We have the drought. We have access problem. The funding has completely shrunk, and the private business does not have the access it should have.
Lazzarini said the situation is likely to worsen in the coming months.
We are looking today at a series of elements that could push Somalia back into a crisis.
The UN says some 2 million Somalis are already dealing with food shortages, and more than 200,000 children are acutely malnourished. The chief technical advisor for the UN's Food Security Analysis Unit for Somalia, Daniel Mola, said those most at risk are displaced people and those living in the areas of Lower Shabelle, Middle Shabelle, and Bai region, the same populations hit hardest by the last famine. He said the potential for a food crisis depends largely on the duration of the rains, which began this month.
In the best scenario, that is the likely outcome would be a below average harvest. Of course, if the rains don't continue through end of May and June, the outcome could be much, much worse.
A military offensive to drive the al-Qaeda-linked militant group al-Shabaab out of areas under its control is creating additional challenges. Lazzarini said the militants are threatening truck drivers and cutting off supply routes to newly seized towns.
Because of this, I would say, policy of encirclement, the access for the private sector is becoming more difficult today than it used to be before.
The UN has requested $933 million to fund humanitarian activities in Somalia this year, but so far has received only 18% of that amount. Lazzarini said the competing crises in South Sudan, Central African Republic, and Syria have taken some of the attention away from Somalia. He said the lack of funding is already threatening life-saving operations, including the UN Children's Agency's health program, as well as World Food Program operations. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
Coming up on 13 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The U.S. military believes al-Shabaab will continue its threats and attacks against nations that contribute troops to AMISOM, the African Union-led force in Somalia. VOA's Marta Vanderwerf reports.
AFRICOM, the United States Military Command for Africa, believes that al-Shabaab will continue to attack nations that contribute troops to the Somalia effort. The commanding general of AFRICOM, David Rodriguez, says despite the fact that al-Shabaab's area of control has decreased in recent months, the militant group continues to be a threat.
We think that they're going to continue to go after the troop-contributing countries to try to disrupt and frustrate the populations of those countries so that the support to the AMISOM effort is limited from those nations, okay? So what they want to do is get those nations out of Somalia. And they're going to threaten them. They're going to go after their homelands to show and to demonstrate to the populations of those countries that it's not worth the continued effort to support AMISOM.
Kenya was attacked again by the militant group Friday when two car bombs were set off in its capital, Nairobi, and 10 people were killed. The attack came right after countries such as Britain and the United States had issued travel advisories for certain regions in Kenya because of security threats. General Rodriguez says al-Shabaab remains a threat to U.S. interests in the region and in Europe and has stated a wish to attack the U.S. mainland as well.
The challenge is that al-Shabaab is now really focusing on the asymmetric attacks that they really adjusted some of their strategy to about a year ago by conducting the sensational terrorist-type attacks.
Al-Shabaab attacked a popular mall in Nairobi last September, killing 67 people and making world headlines for days. General Rodriguez says the U.S. is training AMISOM troops before they go into Somalia to improve their capabilities.
And then we're working with each of the troop contributing nations to help them develop the capacities to mainly share information among all their agencies to get the best intelligence picture that they can get on the threats to their nation and their homelands.
AFRICOM also has a small team at the AMISOM headquarters to support the mission against al-Shabaab. Nations contributing troops to AMISOM are Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda, Sierra Leone, Burundi, and Djibouti. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Representatives from donor countries begin meeting in Oslo tomorrow to decide how much aid to give to South Sudan. The meeting follows more than 5 months of conflict in the country. The International Rescue is calling on donors to be generous to help relieve rising malnutrition, especially among children. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
IRC's Kieran Donnelly says a lot of money is needed for South Sudan, and it's needed now.
The United Nations are calling for $1.8 billion of funding to be allocated to this crisis. That's $1.26 billion on top of $500 million plus that's already been allocated. That seems like a lot of money, but in terms of the needs that we're facing in South Sudan, both the urgent humanitarian needs right now as well as the investments needed to prevent a famine over the coming 9 months or so, that really is bare bones, nuts and bolts programming.
Donnelly is the NGO's vice president for program quality. He says humanitarian conditions in South Sudan have grown worse.
We're seeing a situation that has continued to deteriorate since the outbreak of fighting last December. We're at a situation right now where we have 1.3 million displaced, 300,000 plus of those people are outside the country, and we have up to a million people displaced within the country, living in really appalling conditions, some of them concentrated on UN bases. Many of them have fled to neighboring counties.
He says it's only going to get more difficult to deliver aid.
We're entering the rainy season and seeing a really worrying, concerning situation as far as food security goes, where we're seeing acute malnutrition rates spiking in hard-to-reach areas. We're struggling to get food and supplies into many of those areas, not just the IRC, but the humanitarian community as a whole. And we're really very concerned about what the next several months hold.
The IRC conducted surveys last month in Awil South and Penyajir counties and found malnutrition rates among young children of around 30%. It says those levels are double what the World Health Organization considers critical. Donnelly says children are being recruited as soldiers and women and girls are being sexually assaulted by both sides.
One of the key messages for the donor conference here in Oslo over the next couple of days is that urgent action is needed to avert the loss of another generation of South Sudanese children.
The International Rescue Committee has worked in South Sudan for several decades. Among other things, it provides emergency health services, counsels survivors of sexual violence, supports programs for children, and provides assistance to refugees and the internally displaced. The IRC is encouraged by the recent agreement establishing a month of tranquility in the country, but says success in providing assistance depends on gaining access to all parts of South Sudan. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Forces loyal to a former top Libyan general say they have suspended the country's interim parliament. The U.S. military believes al-Shabaab will continue its threats and attacks against nations that contribute troops to AMISOM, the African Union-led force in Somalia. And representatives from donor countries begin meeting in Oslo tomorrow to decide how much aid to give to South Sudan. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Tensions are mounting in the northern Malian town of Kidal as the government deployed more troops there today after fighting between soldiers and Tuareg MNLA rebels killed at least 36 people during the weekend. VOA's Anne Look reports on what renewed hostilities could mean for peace talks being organized between the rebels and the government.
The Malian government says it is deploying more troops to Kidal to, quote, respond to the separatist MNLA rebels who stormed government buildings Saturday in Kidal. Residents of the town told VOA that the rebel flag is again flying over the governor's building. Mali's prime minister said that the MNLA's actions are, quote, a flagrant violation of the ceasefire agreement signed last June, an amount to what he said is a declaration of war. It remains to be seen whether continued hostilities could derail peace talks already delayed from last year. MNLA spokesman Moussa Ag Asarid in Kidal told VOA that the rebels are, quote, taking note of the government's declaration, but that the MNLA remains, quote, ready and open for negotiation. He says we are in a situation now in Kidal where each side is holding its position. He says there is very little space between the two parties. The population is very worried. But he says there is a precarious calm at this time. The government says the MNLA took more than 24 people hostage Saturday, including civil servants and soldiers. Asarit said they were taken into custody during the fighting for their protection, and the MNLA is not demanding anything in exchange for their release. It has been more than 2 years since the MNLA launched its fight for independence in January 2012. Mali won back much of the north a year later, in January 2013, after French and African troops intervened to push out the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist militants who had taken control. The MNLA pulled back to Kidal, where it continues to circulate freely, despite the presence of French, Malian, and UN forces. The attack Saturday coincided with the visit of Malian Prime Minister Moussa Mara to Kidal. He met with the governor and local officials amid steady bursts of gunfire outside.
Le bruit de ces armes-là met en lumière la nécessité absolue que nous...
Mr. Mara said the situation cannot continue like this. He said the government will resolve this situation either politically, in the spirit of reconciliation, or, quote, if necessary, he said, we will do it by force. He said the government is open to dialogue, but it will not be, quote, pressured by armed men in pickup trucks. Over the past year, both sides have accused the other of not living up to the terms of the ceasefire deal. The Malian government says it will not consider any form of autonomy for the Kidal region. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The annual World Health Assembly opens in Geneva today as global health leaders discuss a new strategy for treatment of XDR-TB that will cover the next 20 years. The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known by its French acronym MSF, says this year's meeting is a very critical moment for the illness as health ministers look to revolutionize TB prevention, care, and control. Another significant highlight of the assembly will be the delivery of over 33,000 signatures by South African TB activist and XDR-TB survivor Phumeza Tesili. The petition urges world health leaders to focus on better drugs and diagnostics needed by thousands of XDR-TB patients. Dr. Gilles Van Ketsem is MFF's medical coordinator for South Africa and Lesotho. I spoke to him about the significance of Phumeza Tesili's presentation of petition and why this meeting is so vital.
Well, I think it's a very important and symbolic event. First of all, it's being handed over by Phumeza Tesili, who exemplifies how difficult it is at the moment to survive treatment for drug-resistant TB and to take treatment for drug-resistant TB. She took more than 3 years of treatment, more than 20,000 tablets, more than 1.5 years of very painful injections, which made her deaf, because that's one of the side effects of the treatment of multidrug-resistant TB.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Phumeza's struggle with XDR-TB and why she is now a committed activist?
What she's asking for is, well, first of all, make treatment accessible, scale up treatment. Today, out of 650,000 people with drug-resistant TB, only 80,000 are being treated, a bit more than 10%. The second thing she's asking is make the treatment better, and with better, we mean shorter, not 2 years as it is now, and with less side effects, mostly without an injection. And thirdly, make funding available to research and development of better treatments.
The treatment that Pumeza received, was this new treatment or was this something that has been the same type of treatment that is normally given?
Treatment for TB, whether it's multi-drug resistant TB or drug-sensitive TB, most of the drugs are extremely old, date from the 60s. Now, Pumeza accessed through Doctors Without Borders some newer drugs, such as linezolid, which are extremely expensive in South Africa at the moment because of patents. There's one new drug, bedaquiline. And there's another new drug that's coming up, the laminate. But at the moment, there is very limited access to these new drugs because they're not registered in many countries and because they're just at, not all research has been done in terms of safety.
Also, you said the treatment did cause her to become permanently deaf. Is this a side effect that most people will experience?
Up to a third of people who take long-time injections with kanamycin or amikacin will get decreased hearing or become deaf. Yes, so it's not the majority, but it's a very large proportion.
Why is this year's World Health Assembly so critical for XDR-TB?
Because we are dealing with an expanding epidemic for which the response is vastly insufficient, and the tools we have to fight it, not very efficient either. So we have bad drugs, we have insufficient research into making the drugs better and making a regimen shorter and easier to take, and we don't have very good programs to detect people with drug-resistant TB. This is a world problem, and you have an expanding MDR, XDR, and even a totally drug-resistant TB in some part of the world that is. So, yes, it's extremely important.
That was Dr. Jill Van Ketsem, MSF's medical coordinator for South Africa and Lesotho.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports.
My name is Edward Ameyibo. I listen to Daybreak Africa to be abreast with developments on the continent. I encourage you to do the same.
You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on The Voice of America.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Forces loyal to a former top Libyan general say they have suspended the country's interim parliament. The U.S. military believes al-Shabaab will continue its threats and attacks against nations that contribute troops to AMISOM, the African Union-led force in Somalia. And representatives from donor countries begin meeting in Oslo tomorrow to decide how much aid to give South Sudan. Coming up, we'll have music from Uganda and in our feature segment, Shortage of Safe Drinking Water in Sub-Saharan Africa. I'm Kim Lewis with the Hayes Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. And happy Monday, Sunny.
Happy Monday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand a Nigerian sprinter tops your sports report today.
Kim, our starting line on the Sunny Side of Sports is African Athletics. Nigerian sprinter Blessing Okagbare sparkled at the IAAF Diamond League meet in Shanghai, China. Okagbare won two events in Shanghai. She set a meet record in winning the women's long jump in 6.86 meters. Our VOA track fans will remember. Blessing won a bronze medal in the women's long jump at an even bigger competition in China, the 2008 Olympics in Beijing. Blessing also won the women's 200 meters race in Shanghai, where she clocked 22.36 seconds. Blessing says the fans in Shanghai proved to be a real blessing for her and the other athletes.
What impressed me most is just, part of me is just keeping my focus, you know. They have an amazing crowd. The crowd is amazing. Shanghai has been amazing. I've been coming here 4 years in a row, so they have an amazing people. And, you know, you want to share the crowd up, you know, so I go out there, put a show for them. It's actually putting a show for the public, and, you know, it's been fun overall.
The Shanghai meet was also fun for several other African athletes who posted victories. One of them was an Egyptian who set a new African record in the javelin. Our Daybreak Africa sportsman Mark Ouma has that story, as well as the results from a busy weekend in African football.
Egypt's Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed stole the limelight at the IAAF Diamond League in Shanghai, China, when he triumphed with a new Africa javelin record of 89.21 meters. The old mark of 88.75 meters by South African Marius Corbett stood since 1998. Kenyan Robert Kiptobi Watt pipped Algerian Olympic champion Taufik Makloufi to win the men's 800 meters in 1 minute and 44.69 seconds, while Ethiopian Yeneu Alimereu triumphed in the 5,000 meters in 13 minutes and 4.8 3 seconds. Senegal's Mamadou Kasse Hanna, Botswana's Amantle Moncho, and Ethiopian Sofia Sefa were runners-up in the men's 400-meter hurdles, women's 400-meters, and women's 3,000-meter steeplechase, respectively. In football, Madagascar edged Uganda 2-1. Central African Republic and Guinea-Bissau drew 0-0 as Liberia pipped Lesotho 1-0 in preliminaries for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers played on Sunday. Mauritania pipped Equatorial Guinea 1-0. Malawi beat Chad 2-0. Tanzania edged Zimbabwe 1-0. Libya and Rwanda drew 0-0, as did Burundi and Botswana. In other matches, Benin dismissed Sao Tome and Principe 2-0. Namibia edged Congo-Brazzaville 1-0. Swaziland and Sierra Leone drew 1-1. Kenya pipped Comoro Islands 1-0, and Mozambique ran over South Sudan 5-0. Elsewhere, Tunisia's CS Sfaxien beat Libya's El Ahli Benghazi 3-1 as the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita edged Egypt's Zamalek 2-1 in mini-league Orange Africa Champions League action on Sunday. Algeria's Entente Setif pipped Tunisia's Esperance 2-1, and Sudan's El Hilal edged the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe 1-0. Meanwhile, Egypt's El Ahli beat Zambia's Nkana 2-0 in Orange Africa Confederations Cup mini-league action on Sunday. Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa and Sewe Sports drew 1-1 with Mali's AS Real de Bamako and Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel, respectively. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Joining us now on the VOA with a package of World Cup football news is our Nightline Africa sportsman, Shay Goon, dot on the spot, Adeyemi.
Good evening, Africa. President Sepp Blatter of World Soccer's governing body, FIFA, has said it was a mistake awarding the 2022 Soccer World Cup to Qatar. He says the tournament will probably have to be held in winter because of the heat. The Qatar technical report indicated clearly that it is too hot in summer, but the executive committee, with quite a big majority, decided all the same that the tournament will be in Qatar, Blatter says on Swiss TV station RTS. FIFA later issued a media advisory, noting that Blatter was in no way questioning whether the tournament will be held in Qatar. Now to our weekly 2014 FIFA World Cup tidbits. It is now just 24 days to the kickoff of the 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil, and the countdown continues.
Put your flags up in the sky, in the sky. And when we send the sand, send the sand. Show the world where you're from, somewhere you're from. Show the world we are one.
That's the official song of the 2014 FIFA World Cup, entitled We Are One. In continuation of my interview with Kunle Solaja, General Editor, Sports, for the Lagos-based The Sun newspaper on Nigeria's provisional World Cup squad, I asked him how far he thinks Nigeria can go at the 2014 FIFA World Cup.
Looking at the draws, I expect Nigeria to cross the first hurdle, that is going beyond the first round. I expect that. Just as I had expected Nigeria to get to the semi-final of the FIFA Confederation Cup last year. Unfortunately, we didn't. Why did I say I expected Nigeria? Even everybody, if you analyze the draws very well, you know that of all the eight teams that featured in the Confederation Cup, Nigeria had the best chances of picking a semi-final ticket ahead of the other seven countries. Why did I say that? We were in the same group with Tahiti, Uruguay, and Spain. And the draws were so favorable to us in the sense that we will be meeting the weakest team of that group first. And if you pick the points that going to the day two, you are already ahead in terms of the number of goals expected from you against a team like Tahiti. The same draw, the same scenario is what we are now facing in the World Cup. You are facing your weakest team in that group, first Iran, which has not been in the World Cup since 1978. And Iran is never known to be to attach any importance whatsoever to football. So if you are able to beat Iran, and then expectedly, you will expect Argentina to beat Bosnia. So, but if we pick our second match too against Bosnia, that means we're already in the next round, even before meeting Argentina.
Looking at the entire African continent, Africa is sending five teams to the World Cup. How do you expect them to perform?
Realistically, it is not possible for the five African teams to advance to the second round. In terms of current form, people will always point at Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana as being in the best of shapes to really make Africa shine. But then the draws in which they belong to, the group they belong to, may not likely give them an easy passage to the next round. And when a team struggle in the first stage, then the likelihood that it will lose team in the subsequent stage is there. And Nigeria, not because I'm a Nigerian, Nigeria, I still believe, of all the five teams from Africa, has the best opportunity of advancing. not necessarily on the basis of the form of the team, but on the basis of the draw that we have made.
You've been listening to Okunle Solaja, General Editor, Sports, for the Sun newspaper, based right here in Lagos. Now to this shocking news. The roof of the stadium hosting the World Cup opener in a few weeks will not be fully finished in time for the tournament. The construction company confirmed that a part of the roof at the Itaquerao will only be completed after the World Cup. There was not enough time to install the glass covers that were supposed to be added to the stadium's roofing structure, so the company and local organizers decided to postpone the work until after the tournament. The metal structures where the glasses have to be installed are in place, but they will be empty by the time the nearly 70,000 fans arrive for the high-profile opener between Brazil and Croatia on June 12th. The venue will host 5 World Cup matches, including one of the semifinals. Finally, Algeria has promised to improve on an embarrassing World Cup record when it competes at the 2014 finals in Brazil. The Desert Foxes last won a match at the tournament 32 years ago and have scored only once in 6 games during 2 subsequent appearances. But midfielder Fawid Kadir says the country can do better with a more experienced squad than that which flopped in South Africa 4 years ago. You will see a different Algeria in Brazil with more maturity and experience than the 2010 squad, Kadir says. Algeria opens its campaign against Belgium on June 17th in Group H. South Korea and 2018 World Cup host Russia complete the group. Apart from Algeria, other African teams heading to Brazil are Cameroon, Ghana, Ivory Coast, and Nigeria. Thanks a lot for listening. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Segun Adeyemi in Lagos.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In National Basketball Association playoff action Sunday, the Indiana Pacers defeated the visiting Miami Heat 107-96 to take a 1-0 lead in the best-of-7 game Eastern Conference Finals. Paul George led a balanced Indiana attack with 24 points. LeBron James scored 25 points for the defending champion Heat. Game 2 in the series is Tuesday night in Indiana. Game 1 in the Western Conference Finals tips off later Monday night in San Antonio, Texas. The San Antonio Spurs will host the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder got some bad news over the weekend when they found out their Congolese forward Serge Ibaka will miss the rest of the playoffs because of a calf injury. The winner of the series between San Antonio and Oklahoma City and Indiana and Miami will meet in the NBA Finals. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 17:30 hours UTC, right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up in our feature segment, shortage of safe drinking water in sub-Saharan Africa. And next, in Zimbabwe, commercial farmers say it's time to rebuild the collapsed agriculture sector. But first, some music. Here is Blue 3 of Uganda with Together.
Let's go. home city. Tell me what kind of drink, girl, you are sippy. When you look closely, you look good in a mini. We have a lot of girls now, pressure in my mind. Now that I found you, me can't change the plan. Let me be the one to give you the ring. Lady, let it be you to give me the love that I need. You know what I mean. Girl, where you in? I mean, wanting something me, you know. Let me be the one to take you over Istanbul, yeah.
Three of Uganda with Together.
Well, 700 million still don't have safe drinking water, and half of those live in sub-Saharan Africa. That bad news comes from a report from the World Health Organization and UNICEF on progress made elsewhere to improve sanitation and safe drinking water. Lack of safe drinking water can lead to cholera, diarrhea, and typhoid, said Bruce Gordon of WHO. Lenore Madu reports for VOA.
A joint report by the World Health Organization and the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, says more must be done to close the gap between the billions who have access to improved water and sanitation and those who do not. The report presents estimates from 1990 to 2012, titled Progress on Drinking Water and Sanitation, 2014 update. It says 2 billion people now have access to improved sanitation, and 2.3 billion people have access to safe drinking water. However, though, more than 700 million people still need access to good drinking sources. Half of these people live in sub-Saharan Africa. Bruce Gordon is the WHO acting coordinator for water, sanitation, and health.
8 out of 10 people without access to an improved water source are still living in rural areas. And within urban areas, we're seeing, for example, also on drinking water, we're seeing that many of the poor people in cities have no choice but to access water in sort of ad hoc ways through pay-per-go kiosks, while the wealthy are able to access their water through a piped into the home system. Overall, we've got to do something about these populations that are hidden in the corners, about the vulnerable and the marginalized. So unless countries start putting together monitoring processes to understand where people are getting their water and where they aren't, who's getting them, are finances going in the right direction?
The report notes poor sanitation and contaminated water are linked to the spread of diseases such as cholera, diarrhea, and typhoid.
Zimbabwe was once the breadbasket of Southern Africa. However, critics say the country was reduced to a basket case after the government launched its land reform policy back in 2000 and removed commercial farmers from their farms. The president of the Commercial Farmers Union says it's time for the government and the remaining commercial farmers to work towards improving the country's agricultural sector. Charles Taff says now is time for national dialogue on the way forward.
The time for emotional engagement has passed. What we need to do now is sit down as all stakeholders in a country and say, right, as Zimbabweans, let's fix this thing. We do not have to continue along this line. We just don't. And the status quo can be improved upon from this point. There's no finger pointing. Let's just fix it. Let's get this thing up and running and let's move forward. The agriculture sector here continues to underperform. It's performing way below its potential. And the reason for that is that the issues of property rights and security of investment have still not been resolved. So we still have a conflict and we still have a country where the inherent value of the land is not able to be utilized. And so the banks are unable to lend aggressively into that market. There's no structured funding. And the whole value chain, basically, of agriculture is not functioning. So we really are trying very hard with government at the moment to try and resolve these issues and get Zimbabwe to turn the corner.
Have you been trying to engage the government, like the Minister of Agriculture, for instance, to look at the things that need to be done that you have been raising, in particular to raise the production in the country so that Zimbabwe does not have to buy food?
Yes, we're in constant consultation with government. But, you know, what we're seeing is that the movement is not going quick enough. And we've got to break the cycle of dependence. What we have is a situation now is where for this coming year now will be the 15th year where we've got to import food again. And it just does not, in my view, make sense. The money that we are spending on food imports in a year could be utilized for many, many other things, such as infrastructure development, electricity generation, and so on. It's just crazy that we're going along this route. It's totally unnecessary. There's plenty of arable land in this country, which is able to be utilized by everybody who wants to farm. But let's base it on an economic model rather than on a political model.
Charles Taff is president of the Commercial Farmers Union in Zimbabwe. He was speaking with Sandra Niara of VOA's Zimbabwe program. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Meeting face-to-face for the first time in months, South Sudan President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar, the former deputy who was leading the armed opposition against him, signed a new peace agreement aimed at ending the terrible violence in that East African nation. Unfortunately, both sides have skirmished in some places since the signing of the agreement. If honored by both sides, the pact will allow for an end to the fighting and for unhindered, badly needed humanitarian access to civilians caught in the conflict. With both leaders saying they are committed to making the cessation of hostilities agreement work this time, the stage may be set to end the political crisis. Both leaders agreed to negotiate a transitional government and to hold inclusive talks to begin a process of national dialogue and reconciliation. Kiir and Machar met May 9th in Addis Ababa in talks hosted by the government of Ethiopia, following separate discussions with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. It is the second time that the two sides have promised to stop fighting. Neither side has adhered to the cessation of hostilities agreement signed in January. Strong international interest has been brought to bear to end the fighting now, which has resulted in the deaths of thousands of people and displacement of 1 million others. Human rights abuses have been committed by both sides, and with the economy in ruins, the nation faces the prospect of famine. Sanctions have been imposed on two individuals identified as committing or ordering human rights abuses or obstructing the peace process there, and other sanctions may follow. The United States welcomes the May 9th agreement as a breakthrough for the future of South Sudan. We urge both leaders to take immediate action now to ensure that this agreement is implemented in full and that armed groups on both sides adhere to its terms. The people of South Sudan have suffered too much for far too long. This agreement presents an opportunity to start a path toward peace that must not be lost. The United States stands with the people of South Sudan and is committed to doing everything we can to assist them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers. Cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there is a youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally. Oh,
yeah. I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.